Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Welcome, everybody. Another episode of Dr. Homebrew. Feel like it's been 4 years since we've done a show, you guys. I feel like it's been entirely too long.
I mean, we've had some holidays in between, so there's that.
Yeah. Well, mainly my birthday, and then, you know, and then, of course, Thanksgiving or whatever it is. I don't know.
Other but stuff.
It's my stuff, really. It's me. That's really what I care about the most. You know what I mean?
My birthday was on Thanksgiving.
It was?
Yeah. People around the world gave thanks for my birth.
Happy birthday, young man.
Thanks, man.
How does it we never really thought you would make it this far, but how does it feel? How does it feel hitting 65?
I'm a young looking 57, I guess, or an old looking, I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good. Although I have to say this last year is the first year where I've actually felt kind of old.
Okay. The first year, really. I've been feeling old for like 6 years.
No, I've managed to get to 57 without really feeling old.
Oh, good for
and
you, man.
2023, you're like, I feel old this year.
Okay. All right.
I also had a birthday since the last time we
Whoa,
met.
Whoa, what is shit? Going Did on we here?
We never established this before, I guess.
No, Cooper, happy birthday.
Yeah, mine's
happy birthday, man.
October 21st.
It's been that long since we've done a show. It's been over a month. It's been 6 weeks.
We did it earlier in October because we wanted Julia from the AHA to come on with us, and that was when it fit in her schedule. Right. So, that was perfect. We did it a little earlier than usual. It has been a while, but
I did not know we were all birthday brothers. I'm November 7th. Scott, David, welcome to the show. It's a birthday talk. We're doing astrology. What's your guys' sign? When were you guys born?
I'm a Cancer. I'm a Cancer, so I'm about 5 months away, so. I'm not in the realm with you guys.
You're not in any danger of being a part of this.
Yeah, everyone's
Libras. Sure. There we go. I don't know what that
All right.
means.
Then he's close to us too, then, right?
Okay. Well, see, there you go. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, David.
I guess Jason and Brian, I guess our parents all had sex on Valentine's Day. It's probably about what happened. Not that I want to think about that, but you know.
I have the video, like the Super 8. My dad was really into like gadgets and stuff. And so they recorded it. Yeah.
Right.
I think
I'm totally that I would, joking, by the way. I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, I would be wiping the vomit off of that if I found that somehow. That would just be, oh, God.
I tell you, man, like, I remember distinctly one time being at my brother's house with my my sister-in-law's, like, family, so, like, cousin-in-laws or whatever, I don't know. And this girl was babysitting me. She's probably, I don't know, 5 or 8 years older than me or whatever. And everyone was gone, and we're like, oh, we should watch a movie. It's like, watch something, you know? And so she was looking through the tapes. She goes, oh, here's one. And she puts it in. And before it starts, my brother comes home. My sister-in-law comes home. And she goes, what are you guys going to do? And she goes, oh, I'm going to show Jason, Amanda's birthing video. Amanda's my niece. And so I was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 at the time or whatever. And I'm like, she's like, no, because, you know, it was a full on here it comes. And I feel like I dodged a bullet. But at the time I was like, well, I don't understand. What's so wrong? She's like, you can't. No, don't just show
people. No, God.
It's not. Bar mitzvah. Here's a cruise we took. And then also here's my child crowning from my vagina.
It's just right there for the grabbing and viewing. That's funny.
I didn't watch my daughter come out of the chute in real life. I was a father at the head. Okay. I didn't want to see that in real. Who would want to watch that in any circumstance at all?
People enjoy it. I had to hear it. I heard it. And I was up at the head. I was like, I'm fine up here. Like, Dad, do you want to come? Nope.
Yep.
Nope. I'm here, man. Yep. I am up here. But anyway. Welcome to the birth talk, everybody. We're talking about our births, our birthdays, astrology signs, the ascendant masters, the whole nine yards. No, we're talking Dr. Homebrew. We have some homebrew today. We have two homebrewers here with us. It's a co-brew, a collab brew, which we always really appreciate and enjoy here on the show. But before we get to that, we want to thank our sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. The good people at Five Star Chemicals are bringing you this and every show. They, as Jamil says, they pay for it so you don't have to. And that's mostly true. But they are great people. They have been with us since the get-go. They get what we're trying to do here, not only in the Brain Network, but on Dr. Homebrew as well. And they try to do a similar thing. We try to help you make good beer, and they try to help you make clean beer, which clean beer is usually good beer. You know what I mean? So check them out, fivestarchemicals.com. And while you're over there, join the Homebrew Club program they have. You can get discounts on PBW. You can maybe test out new products from Five Star before they're even on the market. You can get free monthly educational sessions and maybe free swag too. You never know. So check them out. Fivestarchemicals.com. Join the Homebrew Club. Everyone's cool. Okay, man, I tell you, I've had a week, man. My soundboard died on me. Like my thing the other day, my Rodecaster like died, but it's like glitching and sort of not. And I've been trying to deal with customer service from Rode, but they're in Australia, so they email back like 7 o'clock, and I write back. You go, oh yeah, I've done that, and then I don't hear from them until the next next night. And it's like, can we just?
Yep.
I gotta go. I've bought two different sets of things. I returned some stuff. I'm trying to plug it in. It's not working. Now it's suddenly magically working. I got a whole new system, and that's a lot cheaper, but it's hot as hell. It's like on fire. So that's interesting. Anyways, I've been dealing with that for like 2 days. I recorded a show on Monday night. I haven't even edited it yet. It's just, I've been like figuring out audio problems, and it is not fun. I tell you,
this is going to be the best sounding show ever just because of
it. Might be, honestly, because I hated the way the processing on the other one sounded. That digital soundboard, just I didn't like it, and I was always suffering from it. And you know how I like to suffer.
So you step, you know, back
it sounds better already. I'm not kidding. I'm not always in love with how that old one sounded, and this one sounds a lot nicer.
I appreciate that, because it's just a feed from the microphone into the board. There's no compression. There's no processing. There's no anything.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we're just hearing ourselves on the Zoom thing, but what we hear you today.
ZZ, okay. Here's from Old Head. ZZ is in the chat on Facebook, and then Blobber's on the chat now. Wow.
No shit, Blobber.
Hey.
Oh my God. I haven't talked to him in years.
Yeah, I know. A little Canadian friend. Anyways. All right, Scott and David, welcome to the show, fellas. I appreciate you hanging on through our, you know, little BS session. Of course, yeah. So what beer did you guys make for us? What do you got for us?
Well, we've got a mixed fermentation sour. We've something we've been working on for about a year and a half. We've got about four or five different beers mixed in there over the last 18 months. And we've just been riding it out, testing it from time to time, and finally got around to bottling some and see where it's at and what we need to do moving forward.
A mixed fermentation sour. And you have a couple of beers. I mean, you're brewing and then adding to it.
Yeah, we've got a, I don't know if you can see this here. We've got a 15 gallon vessel. And
oh yeah.
We've,
wow.
Yeah. And we started, like I said, about 18 months ago, we started with 5 gallons. Then a few months later, we had another 5, and all told, we put 20 gallons into there. We pulled 5 gallons out and a couple of gallons here and there. But
over time, you're adding in. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's going to affect the beer.
You know, and part of our goal is to keep this going. And every so often, we'll take 5 gallons out. Hopefully, it'll be a good sour. We'll drink it. We'll put some more in, let it start to sour from the beer that's there. So hopefully, it'll be a continuing batch that we have.
Yeah, that's the Solara method, right?
Solara,
okay. Yeah. See, I got it. I got you. Okay, well, I'm excited. I don't know that we've had a beer like this before. Is it the same base beer all the time?
Not 100%, but pretty similar, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Most of it is wit. Part of it is more of a standard Belgian wheat, kind of a Blue Moon type base beer. So those are the two main contributions to it.
Awesome. Great. Well, I can't wait to jump into this. Cooper.
All right.
You want to start us off, buddy?
Well, we've got a nice...
It's the 20B, right? On the
28B, yeah. That's you got the right one. Got yeah. Right. We've got a Sam Adams bottle here, and when I opened it, there was no hiss, and that was, as was discussed earlier, the gentleman had a little problem getting the bottle carbonation to take hold in time for us to taste it, because I guess we threw it together pretty quick. And I've had it in the, you know, I don't know, I just got it from Brian the other day, but I've had it in the fridge since then. And if it was bottle conditioning early on, it hasn't been continuing to, at least since, you know, Thanksgiving weekend. So, but open it up and pour a bit here. And yeah, sorry that carbonation didn't work out for you yet, but we're going to save the other bottles too, Brian and I, and taste it again later sometime. So maybe we can revisit that. In the nose, I'm getting a kind of a light grainy malt, I would say there's a moderate acetic note up front. It's kind of reminiscent of a Duchess, but without the rich malt of a Flanders Red. It's more of an apricot-like fruitiness here that pervades. Not getting any obvious funk or any major Brett character coming through here. It's not a super funky sour, and that's fine. That can be at varying levels. There is some sharp lactic sourness here too. I was wondering if I got some slight, a little bit of diacetyl, but not getting any DMS or anything, but there's kind of a grainy quality to it overall. Cereal-like, I guess. Appearance-wise, it's a hazy deep gold or kind of light amber-colored beer. No head, and therefore no retention or color to the head. Also, that's fine. You could serve these not non-carbonated if you wanted, I suppose, but it's I think the intention here was to have some carbonation. That's okay, but it's definitely not insanely hazy. It's not totally opaque, but it's and head retention on these sours can be poor as it is, so there is a little carbonation in there. It's just not pushing that much up. Getting into the flavor, there's a blend of lactic and acetic sour, probably mostly lactic here, medium level.
Yeah.
It's not teeth meltingly sour. That's not just nearly tart.
No,
the balance is to the malt for sure. No hops noted here. The Belgian wit, American wheat styles are coming through, or the Belgian wheat beer. You know, it's kind of like a wheaty overall coming through as a general grainy quality. Not unpleasant, but it's also coming across to me like there's a bit of a THP, like a Cheerio-like. It's called tetrahydropyridine. You get that on the exhale as you swallow the beer, and the pH of your mouth comes back up more towards neutral. On the exhale, you can taste that a little Cheerio-like thing in there.
And yeah, mouse taint is what they call it, right?
Yeah, yeah. THP. That is kind of a medium low level of that. I'm still trying to decide if there's diacetyl in it. I'm not really getting a super buttery thing at all in here in the flavor.
I do. Like in the medium palate, it's kind of heavy.
It's honestly. Kind of okay. Yeah. It's kind of hard in these two because there's so much else going on to compete with it. But I thought, in the aroma I definitely got a little butteriness, and the flavor it's blending with that THP.
But can I just butt in and say that it actually works really well?
Right.
Like I kind of like it. It's like movie theater popcorn. It's sort of one of the more, for me, the more standout like diacetyl. But with everything else going on in the beer, it kind of works, and I'm not offended by it in the slightest.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just me.
So yeah, there's different, PDO can kick out some diastole if you've got some PDO going in there, but it doesn't seem like ropey, or, you know, it doesn't have any weird chunkiness in there or anything. So, but yeah.
Like me.
Anyway, it might, you know, sometimes a sour will just go through phases where it kicks out some diastole and then it gets reabsorbed and ages out. And same with THP, that can go away over time here too. And as you, I find that Solaris seem to me to be less susceptible to that if you keep them going and keep, you know, keep the, oh, we'll get to feedback down the road, but, you know, keep them covered, keep them, you know, not a lot of headspace, keep the airlock full.
Like the man says, you got to keep them separated, right?
Blanket with CO2 if you're going to open it up a lot and muck around with the beer,
yeah,
which can be tempting. The more you just leave them alone, sometimes the better, other than airlock. Mouthfeel wise, it's a medium light bodied with no carbonation. It's not warming or astringent, no creaminess either. There's a low bite to it, but it's not too aggressive of an attack. Still just a touch of some kind of roughness, but it's not like a super leathery, biting, harsh, you know, attacking astringent beer at all. It's fairly smooth on the palate, and the sourness is not too biting. It's not too acidic. Overall, this tastes kind of like a sour that's not quite through its process, where, you know, it's not sick, but the flavors are really not quite melding together yet the way you like it to. I do like the apricot fruitiness that's in there, and that's something that might come through more in time as some of these other things either age out or morph into something else. I would say the acetic quality being a little higher already, it may be hard to age one like this. It's, you know, if you keep it, like I said, airlock's full, all of that stuff, minimize oxygen contact with it, it shouldn't go crazy. But, another thing you can do too is to add some Brett to the beer to give it a little more of a funky character. And the Brett is going to chew on some of the other things that are in there and, add some complexity, and it'll age out. But again, I think that some of the classic advice for reducing the THP is avoiding oxygen in the presence of Brett. So, if you do add Brett, keep the oxygen exposure as low as possible. I'm sure there's going to be oxygen in there, but just let it age a little bit more. And it'd be fun too to talk about how you bottle conditioned it, what kind of sugars you might have added, or yeast. I know that some breweries like Russian River will put a wine yeast in when they bottle condition, like their consecration, and because in such a low pH environment, the existing yeast strains are already probably very tired and maybe not ready to keep it. Let's keep it going. Hey, here's a little sugar. Let's go. It might take many weeks or months to get to that level with the existing strain, and it'll go through its own morphing as it's doing that too. A little re-fermentation, and that again can kick out things like diacetyl and things like that. So, if possible, I would just say, can you put it in a keg and just shake condition, or time? Carbonate it in the keg instead of messing with bottle conditioning. But there may be a reason you wanted to do that. So I don't know. I with so many things going on to me, I know JP kind of liked the balance and liked the diacetyl. To me, the THP was a fairly distracting, and the acetic and the diacetyl, it came out in the good territory to me. I landed at a 23 as it is now, but I could see a lot of room for improvement. It's really, the base beer here is not bad at all. It's got a nice light, light pale sour kind of quality, and it's gonna probably just continue to improve as you pull it off and add more quality beers. Really limit the oxygen as you do that, and keep it going, and like I said, maybe add some Brett and play around with it. And you could also, you know, split it up too if it's really sour, pull some off and adding new fresh beer. It's going to keep it aging and keep it going. And the, you know, I have sour carboys that I've had for, you know, a decade in my closet, and they've, from what they originally were, you know, to what they are now, each one has morphed very, you know, slowly over time and changed character as I add different things to them.
What did you give it?
23.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. That's right, Char, it falls for me.
Got it. All right, Char, let's move it. Not move it. I don't know all why right. I said that, but let's go.
Let me go fast. Yeah. Fast. Scott, are you at a homebrew club? I got to ask my usual question.
No, not currently. No.
Okay. Neither am I. We should both go to a doze meeting sometime. That's probably, if you're close enough to drop off beer, we could probably both make it to doze one of these days. But, you know, I like this beer, and I don't have a lot of comments other than what, in addition to what Cooper said, and he's really the sour guy. But I have a few thoughts myself. I didn't get much hiss. I know when you dropped it off with me, you told me to let it sit out and try to carbonate some more. And I did. And then it was Thanksgiving. And then because it was Thanksgiving, they got put out in the garage, not in a fridge, just out sitting out in the garage. And it was not as warm as it has been the last few days. So it's probably why, one reason it hasn't gotten as carbonated as it might. There's almost no hiss when I opened it. I made that comment. I definitely got diacetyl butter up front more than anything else. Low malt, no hop aroma, got sort of a low acetic. Brian brought up the Duchess. It wasn't quite like the Duchess, which is almost like drinking carbonated balsamic vinegar, if you think about it.
I can't do Duchess, man. I gave up. I've tried, you know, the first time I had it, I was like, oh, this may be an off bottle. But it is very on the heavy on the side of nail polish remover for me. I can never do it. Yeah. Sweet nail polish remover. It's just not good.
Mm. I like the Duchess, but having said that, I haven't had a Duchess in probably 12 years, 15 years. Mm. So I don't know if I drank one now, who knows how much I'd care for it. Yeah. There was a time when I bought like a case of it and every one of them was a gusher. And I'm like, okay, they had some quality control issues, like a little bit in the early 2000s, neither here nor there. So the aroma, I mean, I gave it a 5 out of 12 just because of so much diacetyl was there. And I'll talk about a little bit at the end too. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Hazy is okay. You know, this is a style of mixed fermentation where it should kind of match the base beer, but it doesn't have to. So I didn't knock any points for that. Almost no head, medium gold in color. You know, I was surprised by the haze on a sour beer, and I didn't knock off any points. There's nothing wrong with it. But a lot of the time, especially like a wit beer or a wheat base beer, those are the kind of bigger starches that the bacteria really love to chew down in a sour beer. So it's not unprecedented to have a hazy sour, but it's a little hazier than I'd expected. Flavor at first, interestingly enough, I didn't get a ton of lactic flavor, but right out of the gate, there's some lactic sharpness that I got initially. Then some of the diacetyl sort of a butter flavor, low level of sourness, which now that it's a little bit warmer, I come back to this, I'd say more like medium sour. It's hard to tell if there's any bitterness because the sourness, I think, is enough that it kind of overtakes any hot bitterness that will be in here. By mid palate, I start to get some Brett funk, which I thought was really nice. And it made the finish to be more complex because there was that funkiness. There's a huge, I echo what Brian said, a huge Cheerios flavor all the way through. And it's not, sometimes you got to really, people, I think, go to extremes to try to see if they can taste it. And this was not a thing where you had to go to extremes to try to taste it. There was a lot of THP in this sample. The finish was long and balanced more toward the funk and the sour. I'll give it 10 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, medium body, very low carbonation, neither creamy nor astringent. So it's a 3 on mouthfeel. Overall impression, I gave it a 6 for a total of 27. I think this has the potential to be what a really good beer. You know, we've all had sour beers where you have a sip and you're like, oh, dear God, this will never get any better. It's not good. And then it's not going to get better with time.
Right.
The diacetyl, you know, I agree with you, JP. I didn't hate it. It was out of place, but I think it's something. My first thought was this is a younger beer. And I made a comment here that I wonder if the diacetyl makes me think it's young. And that's kind of the downside of the Solera method, is the upside is you constantly have a lot of bugs in there. They're constantly regenerating and they're happy, and you're not having to go pitch a bunch of bacteria or yeast every single time that you're trying to you're adding some more work. The downside is it never finishes, in a sense, right? Because I guess if you don't add anything for a long time, what you have in there can't finish. But if you're always adding something new, it never gets done. You know, I'm not a sour beer expert. You know, Cooper's the sour beer expert of this group by far. But I wonder if that was maybe part of the issue is, I don't know. I'm looking forward to you guys telling us when the last time you added some work to this.
You saying the problem is that it can't ever finish, so the bugs and the yeast can't ever clean up all the kind of weird stuff they offput?
That's a guess.
Yeah,
that's a guess on my part.
But I just want to see if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and I'm not sure I'm right on that.
Yeah.
I've never done a Solera, and I'm not a big sour beer brewer. Never, I think I made one once. Maybe twice, but I'm not an expert by any means. But
no.
That's what I wonder if that's maybe why I thought it was young.
Yeah,
and I mean it has potential to be a really interesting beer. I'd like to come back to it in 6 months, and we've got a bottle. Maybe we'll just hang on to it, and we can have that. Maybe do a show in 6 months about that
fun.
Bottle.
Yeah,
see what we think about it. But that's ultimately 27 out of 50. It's in the good category. I think largely because I believe in the potential of the beer more than I believe in what it is this exact second.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. All right. Let's see. Who wants to, Scott, you look like you're ready. You have a piece of paper in your hand. Why don't you, you want to talk to us a little bit about.
I got my notes, man. I'm ready to go.
About the recipe and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, that's when I compiled these notes yesterday, getting ready for tonight. The thing that struck me was that, yeah, overall, I think you're right, Brian. It is overall young. The first beer that we started souring was 18 months ago, but as recently as 2 months ago, we added some PDO, and we added a Belgian wit that I've been brewing with an Imperial Sour Batch yeast, which has some Brett and lacto in it as well. So that was only added to this batch 2 months ago. And before that, we tried to up the gravity a bit about 4 months ago by adding just some just a DME wort solution because we weren't seeing the changes we hoped to see.
Oh, interesting.
And then 9 months ago, we added some lacto. And so, yeah, there were a lot of recent additions in the last 4 to 6 months. So I can see where this definitely needs some more time to sort itself out.
Yeah, PDO only 2 months ago. That's not very much time for PDO at all, in my understanding.
And that was the first.
Yeah,
that was the first edition of PDO that we added. In fact, we were tasting it 3 or 4 months ago. We weren't getting as much funk as we thought we would like, and we thought that might be the way to do it. And I find it very interesting that you guys have noticed the diacetyl so much, and I think probably from that recent PDO edition. Does that sound like something you guys would think is the case?
The PDO is going to kick out some
Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, some butter. Yep. But
okay.
It goes through that phase, and then it'll clean itself up later on down the road, I think. So 6 months from now, this would be a totally different beer. And then just talking about the pace of Solera, I don't think it's impossible for a Solera to ever be finished. It's not. If you pull off 5 gallons and replace 5 gallons every month, then of course it's never going to be finished. If you pull off 5 gallons every 6 months to a year and let it go, it's going to take, minimum, 6 to 12 months from the last edition, probably for it to be quite right or getting there. And then that's when I would pull off the one. You can always start another one too. Go a little slower.
So what you're saying is that basically in order to get everything to kind of blend right, it needs to hang out in that fermenter for a year. not adding anything in and letting things really kind of pile on?
I would say, you know, 6 months to a year, because there's already, the bugs are already pretty happy in there. It's probably accelerating and starting to, you know, as you feed it, it's keeping those bugs excited, keeping them going. There's going to be more of them in there.
What about pulling off, you know, 5 gallons or whatever? If you're going to add, let's say they're going to add 5 gallons and they want a keg, some or bottle, some whatever. What about pulling that off into a keg, purging it, and then letting it age in a keg for, you know, 3 months just to finish out in that keg while you can still top off your Solara and kind of keep it going that way? Is that a thing? Or
yeah, that would be another way you can do it. Or you could use that, you know, that keg, you know, let something go for a longer time and mm-hmm. then do a blending at the end and just have a number of different ones where we've aged this one 18 months. It's plenty sour. The mother batch is not quite as sour as we want, and then blend those things until you get what you want. But yeah, there's a lot of different things you can do.
Okay.
This is the guy with a 10-year-old carboy in his closet.
There's things you can do.
Oh man, I bet blending day is fun.
There's things you can do, but should you? That's the question.
Yeah. Well, you should you know, limit oxygen. I would keep adding Brett whenever you have something that he's cleaning up. And with this one, I think it's like you guys said, it's not getting quite as funky as you wanted it to. Give that PDO a chance to develop, and that'll help somewhat. But Brett's going to be the one that gives more of that, you know, the hay-like and interesting kind of, you know, barnyardy, farmyard kind of qualities, depending where it goes, hay-like and horse blanket and some fun stuff. But, you know, depending on, and there's a lot of different strains of Brett you can play with. Read up on what you might want to add to it and add different kinds of Brett to it. You know, you don't have to use just one. There's a lot of different bacteria in there already, but I think we kind of interrupted that where you were talking about the beer still. And if there were some notes that you wanted to keep going on there, we'd love to hear what else you guys did. What do you know what kind of Brett you added in when you added the Brett?
David, I don't know. I had the sour batch from Imperial. They say it has 3 strains of Brett, and I don't know what those 3 strains were. And then I know we added 1 pack of Brett back in September of 22, but my notes don't say which strain that was.
Yeah.
That's all I have out of it, also.
Cool.
I don't want to crap on your beer too much. I feel bad about the score a little bit, but I mean, it's really cool what you're doing. And I think I want that to get lost, that what you're doing is really cool. And people try it from time to time. And that's a really cool thing to do, especially at a homebrew level. And if Cooper says it can get finished, I believe him. And I just keep it up. And he says you can do more than one. And it sounds like the voice of a man that's done more than one at a time. It's really cool and it's creative. And I really appreciate getting the chance to drink it.
Yeah, I do like it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
I think the wit beer and the wheat, the Belgian wheat and the wit are, you know, because you said you had a combination of two. I think I like that idea. I think they are bringing something different to the blend. I would love this taste it carbonated, you know, because I think maybe that can kind of hide some of the diacetyl. I don't really know. It's super unique. I think it's very interesting, and I definitely want you guys to try to keep going at it and, you know, perfect it a little bit and kind of work on some of those flaws there and work on your timing. And I think the flavors are cool. I really like it.
Now this is definitely a project in process, and part of our going on was to get your input to see how we could impact it moving forward.
I think you're getting there. I think you're getting there pretty good. Yeah, there's like a citrusy orange tangerine kind of thing happening too. That's super interesting. I like it.
Cool.
Yeah, we did a club pale sour and we put it in a wine barrel for 12 months and we didn't get to, you know, we tasted it, a year afterwards at our holiday party and it wasn't there. It was a lot like this one. And mm-hmm. then we waited another 6 months Actually, we waited, and then the pandemic kicked in, and we couldn't taste it again for a long while. And when we tasted it again, it was completely different.
Yeah.
But like maybe a little went a little too long, but it was definitely much more sour. It was like this. It wasn't quite as sour as I wanted it. The flavors hadn't kind of melded yet.
So what can we get? Let's give them a couple tips on how they can improve it. I mean, we talked a little bit about timing, but maybe like something solid.
Yeah. Time, limit oxygen, add more bread.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can also turn it red if you want to add a darker beer or, you know, a richer beer to it. I like the redder mixed fermentation sours. They get a little more Flandersy and kind of fun. But, you know, if you want to perfect the pale sour, this is a good one to, you know, to work at. But
this sour collaboration project one, we also have project number two, which is a brown ale that we're working on souring.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Fun.
Like an Oud Bruin or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
No, I think you guys, you know, I think it's a little bit too soon after the PDO, but I like the fact you can tell there's been lacto, PDO, Brett fermentation. You know, you can tell there's some complexity with what's been eating your wort and making some flavors. And yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to trying the other bottle of this in a few months.
Absolutely.
Well, I know where you live now. So.
And the Brett needs something to chew on. So if you're just adding things as you're going, it doesn't have to be a perfectly balanced example of any beer. I would brew it on the sweeter side and let it, you know, have a residual gravity after the ale yeast that you've used has fermented it out. So just use a really high mash temp, add, you know, Cara pills or whatever quantum malts you want to use to increase that finishing gravity of the base beer. And then, and again, wheat and things like that, oats, wheat, those kind of adjuncts will also give it long starch, you know, chains to chew on. The Brett loves to chew on that stuff, and it goes for a long time. And it'll take a long while for those flavors to develop. But when they do, they're going to really start kicking in. Another thing that you can do is also add wood aging the beer. You can, you could drop a couple of oak cubes in the beer or a spiral and get it to where it's going to have some wood character, which is also going to probably help the flavors balance. But, you know, that's more of a finishing thing. I would kind of wait till it's in the territory you want it to be and then decide if you want to, you know, put a spiral in one of your kegs and, you know, and wood age one of them and see how that goes and see if you like it. Then you could wood age the whole batch if you want.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Cool. So. Yeah. All right, guys, you got any other questions for the doctor's homebrew?
I got one question. We've done some trying to add fruit to the sour, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on if that's a, you think it's a good idea, what fruits you might think are interesting to go with it.
I think it's always a good idea. I would think so. You want to stay on the lighter stone fruit, maybe some citrusy. And I don't know. Citrus and sour is hard because I was trying to play off what I perceive as like an orangey thing in there already, but I think apricots are always good. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
Apricot, peach, or cherry are going to be some really good ones to use.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, you know, if you're adding fruit at this point and then you're going to age it another 6 months and to a year, it's, you know, the fruit, you should drink a fruited sour sooner and not once it's fruited, not let it age more and more because that fruit's just going to start going away. You know, but yeah, cherry is a great one. Have some fun with it. Pull something off into another small carboy and fruit it one carboy at a time as you can.
Yeah, what little 1 gallon growler size things. You know, you can play with different fruits. You know, put like you said, put an apricot in one, like Brian was saying, put cherry in another one. You know, use the ones that people know work.
Yeah.
Do a gallon at a time. What's the worst that happens? You get a terrible gallon and you dump it out.
Yeah, try to get good quality fruit, you know, from a farmer's market or grown up, you know, tree ripened on your own. A tree or someone you know, and you know that'd be that the fresher the fruit the better it's going to be too. Grocery store fruit, you know, it's not been, you know, it's been ripened on the way to the store.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, if that's it, we'll let you guys go.
All right.
That's great. Thanks. Appreciate
awesome.
It
guys.
All right, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And we look forward to having you on again. And you guys listening, stay right there. We'll be right back with another beer on Dr. Homebrew. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you so much.
What's up, homebrewers? Hey, let me ask you a question. You spend a lot of time making your beer taste the way you want it to, right? Some of you even send beers in to Dr. Homebrew for feedback. Well, the next logical step in your creativity is to craft some labels for those beers. And there's nobody better at creative labels than GrogTag. Their easy-to-use designs let you turn out some pretty amazing stuff like labels, bottle caps, coasters, even six-pack carriers with minimal effort on your part. They have a range of label sizes that fit any vessel you can think of. Bottles, cans, growlers, kegs. GrogTag has you covered. Head over to GrogTag.com today and check out their line of amazing, fully customizable templates and get your beer looking its best. GrogTags are water resistant, reusable, and will have your naked bottles looking great in no time. That's GrogTag.com and be sure to use code BNARMY at checkout to save 10% on your order.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are back on Dr. Homebrew with Jake. Jake, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Now, I've got to say, you look cozy as hell right now. You got nice little sweater going on. You got the full beard, the bald head, and you're in a dark room. You look like, I don't know, Mariah Carey's going to come out and kiss you on top of your head right now.
That's what I'm really hoping. it's cold here and nice and cozy. It's sweater season for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. In the studio, it gets super hot, and then I go outside and it's like freezing. So I'm in shorts and a t-shirt, but I go out to like get this beer. I'm like, oh my God, I need a cozy. Well, I love sweaters. I can't wait to put mine on, man.
He's talking California freezing though. So
it's California freezing. So like in the house, it's like 68.
It's 60.
It's chilly. Watch out.
It's been cold here lately though. I mean, the other day we actually had the car windshield was frozen at 6 o'clock in the morning. Had to get the defrost, put the defrost on and stuff. It was pretty cold. There was actually a frost warning, and thankfully it was only for like an hour because my wife's plants were all outside. She's like, oh my God, my plant's going to die. I'm like, well, it's supposed to be like an hour. It'll be fine. I think they're fine.
Yeah, I think they're all right. All right, Jake, what do you got for us here, man? What beer did you send us?
So I sent you a pumpkin beer. And I just got a disclaimer that I'm no aficionado of pumpkin beers, but they're fun to make once a year.
Okay.
And I believe I once heard you, JP, say that you liked pumpkin beers. So when I sent that other beer, I thought, what the hell? I'll send him a pumpkin as well.
Nice. I appreciate that, man. I do like pumpkin beers. I am not afraid to admit it. I will say that with my full chest, man. I like them. They're not something I can have all the time. Yeah. But I do appreciate them. It's one of the few styles that I'm interested to see how people make. And like, I'm excited to drink it. It's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to get? More spices? Am I going to get a little bit of, you know, roasted pumpkin kind of flavor going on? What am I, you know, what's going to happen here? So I appreciate it. I'm thrilled.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Char, what's your term? Butterino?
B-U-T-T-E-R? Arena? We said the diastole. Beer.
I mean, if you want, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just, what am I doing tonight? Am I awake? What's even happening? What's going on? Jake, I have to ground myself somehow here so I don't just totally go on tilt. I have to ask the question I always ask. Are you in a homebrew club?
Yeah, I'm a member of the Louder Day Brewers in Salt Lake.
Oh God, I love that. One of the better ones I've heard. The Louder Day Brewers. I love beer pods. You know, I know many people on the Brewing Network aren't always real fond of the beer puns. I can never get enough. And that's just awesome. So cool. All Salt Lake brewers listening, go check out the Louder Day Brewers. You'll enjoy. I like this beer. I'm kind of in between maybe JP and Coop as far as pumpkin beer. Like, I don't love them. I don't hate them. But it's fun this time of year. You know, there are some good ones out there, and it's always fun to have one that's good.
It's fun.
What am I? I'm on tilt. What am I even doing, JP? I mean,
You know what? I always like two things I like: fun and good and good beers. And especially when those good beers are fun to have, I'm double the trouble, man. Can't get them off me.
Maybe I'm delirious. I don't know. Am I real? Is any of this real and happening?
You're doing great. Hunting for the fun on the score sheet.
Where yeah, what's even fun? Happening? Yeah, there's a checkbox for that somewhere.
There's a low to medium fun on the opening.
Yeah. See.
Maybe I just put that in a PDF somehow to add that fourth box at the bottom.
God, that'd be so good.
I should talk to Gordon about that.
Should be right between estuary and grassy, but it's not there.
Yeah. If there's ever a proctor, whatever, that you can do for the show, what are you showing me?
Yeah. Well,
thank you. Sorry, my wife is interrupting my work to give me a beer. Whatever. Who cares? Go ahead. Shark, go ahead. Keep going.
Okay, aroma. I opened up this bottle. I poured it. And the first whiff I got was sort of a pumpkin skin acetaldehyde. And I struggled with this for a while because I was never great at noticing acetaldehyde until Nicole Ernie, you're on one of the shows, I believe, was talking to us about acetaldehyde and how it can be like a pumpkin skin aroma. So I was really wrestling with, is this acetaldehyde or is it pumpkin? Because the bottle says you'd added some pumpkin to the beer. And I found that I still don't know. We'll find out at the end here, maybe what's really going on with this. But I had
pumpkin.
Yeah. It was like a fresh pumpkin kind of character in the aroma. So I knocked some for acetaldehyde, even though probably it's the pumpkin, but it's hard to tell for me. Medium malt with some caramel components, no hop aroma, 6 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, very low head, probably from spices. Usually you start spicing things, and you can't see that now. And it kills the head of virtually anything. Crystal clear, color's light brown, so give it 2 for appearance. The flavor initially got that kind of pumpkin character and nutmeg, which I thought the nutmeg was really well handled. You did a great job with the nutmeg. That's one of those spices that's really strong, and it's so easy to go over the top. I mean, it can be a matter of probably like just milligrams of nutmeg from being pleasant to being unpleasant and just being too much. And it's a tricky spice. I think you did really, really well with that. You know, there's some nutmeg character, but it's not dominant. It's maybe one of the few beers I've ever had that had nutmeg nutmeg crazy. Even baked goods that have nutmeg, I don't always like those for the same reason. Maybe I'm just sensitive to it. Who knows? I made a note, it was almost like a beer de garde in terms of which I haven't had a beer de garde for ages, but they have a flavor I like to think of as being like a cellar aroma. It's not a cellar flavor. And it's not, to me, an off flavor. It's just kind of something to me that reminds me of a cellar. I think that was the pumpkin in this. A very low bitterness, no hop flavor. I didn't really get much cinnamon or ginger. Which were ingredients that you said were there in the bottle. I think that if those hadn't been declared ingredients, I'd have come up, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 points in my score. Again, I appreciate the restraint because ginger can overtake everything in a hurry, too, just like nutmeg. If you have nutmeg and ginger, unless you really know what you're doing, you can really just blow out, you know, the whole flavor and aroma of a beer, but it's nothing but one of those two things. And I appreciate going the other direction and being a little more restrained with that. It's well attenuated, finish is balanced towards spice. It's also kind of a quick finish. It's interesting for a spice beer, maybe because of the attenuation or something. A lot of times the spice beer like hangs on your tongue for a while. The spices, they don't here. I mean, they're pleasant. You enjoy them. You have the finish and it's done. And it's not something that's just you're licking your roof of your mouth for the next 5 minutes trying to wonder why you're still tasting that. Give it an 11 for flavor, mouthfeel, almost no carbonation, low body, there's no warming, neither creamy nor astringent. I think especially with an amber beer being the base, which should have a little more body, a little more carbonation, I gave that a 3, knocked off a couple of points for that. So 3 out of 5 for mouthfeel, 6 for overall impression, for a total of 28. Actually, I had Let me back up here. I had made a note here. I should give it a 7. So we make a total of 20. No, never mind. It's 28. I'm so on tilt, JP, tonight. I don't know what's going on right now. I'm
You're on tilt. Look at you.
Well, Cooper is giving his. I'm going to just take a few deep breaths and get back to normal here. I appreciated the gentle hand and the spices. Like I was saying earlier, I think that was really the right way to go here. But it's maybe a little bit too gentle with a couple of declared ingredients. And I just didn't really quite get those. I'm curious to hear about your process for how the pumpkin got in here. I may just be totally misunderstanding the flavor that I'm thinking of as acetaldehyde. But we hear about your process. I think that'll help me understand what's actually going on a little better. I think it's a great idea. It's a great thing to brew once a year, and hopefully you'll send us one again in 2024. So thanks very much.
Very good. What was the number again, Char?
28.
28. All right. Cooper, let's go, man. Light it up.
Okay.
Tripping, though. Don't be wiling out Char.
JP, I will not trip. Brian, go get a paper bag. Breathe into it a few times. Light hiss upon opening. Pumpkin ale with cinnamon, nutmeg, and ginger. Okay. It was very cold when I first judged it, and I'm letting it warm up. I've been letting it warm up since I opened it around 6:45 or whatever, 6:50. And it's now, almost 8:45. So it's warmed up substantially, and I did want that to happen. In the nose, I got only faint spices coming across. Earlier, I felt like the ginger kind of won. I might be a little sensitive to the ginger, but I definitely get a ginger in there. But it just has, a hint of cinnamon only. And that's still true. I'm not getting a lot of cinnamon at all. Kind of a medium low nutmeg that is nice and restrained. And I do appreciate that, like Brian said. The malt character is kind of sweet seeming, but it's not overtly caramelly rich. Or, it's just faintly caramelly, a little nutty maybe. Clean ale, no DMS or diacetyl to me. Also, I didn't really get any acetaldehyde. The aromas were low overall in the earlier judging, but they're coming through a little more strongly now because it's at a better judging temperature. So I apologize for that. For an autumn seasonal, I do still want it to be maybe a little bolder than that. And have the spice character come through just a bit more. I definitely don't want to go crazy on that because I, like JP, I could, or like Brian, maybe more. A pumpkin ale once in a great while. I like to taste one that's really well made and that makes me have fun.
Yeah. Fun.
Fun is the key aspect there.
So you're going to mark this on maximum fun?
I will. The beer is quite clear. Amber, a deep amber colored beer with a low head of fine white bubbles that persists pretty well. Nothing really wrong with the appearance. I gave it 3 out of 3 there. Flavor wise, it's lightly malty and very light on the hops. There might be a little faint toffee in the malt. It's not really caramelly, just kind of generally a slight darker malt character, but not anything really distinctive. There's not a lot of spice covering up either. So there's something, I'd like the malt to kind of come through a little more than it is, even as it warmed. It's quite dry, but not bone dry. Still has a hint of some sweetness, but overall it's on the drier side for what I'd want. One of the nice things about a pumpkin spice beer is when it plays kind of candy-like or like a dessert or like a pie, and you want that. You want the sweetness is going to be part of that aspect of it, which is why pumpkin is such a terrible ingredient to put in a beer. Why would anyone ever do that? If you're going to use pumpkin, I would...
Because it's there.
Roast it and use a light hand on it, because all it's going to do is dry out your beer too much, and this, you're not going to have the sweetness to accent it unless you really just go crazy with your mash temp or add other malts, caramel malts or something that's going to add more body to the beer, add more unfermentable starches that are going to stay in there and leave some hint of a sweetness. I digress. you know, the spices, the ginger and the nutmeg kind of linger into the aftertaste a bit. The cinnamon is really low, almost hard to, almost not detectable. The bitterness medium low and out of the way, that's good. You got a clean ale fermentation. I really like the cleanliness of the beer to me seems fine. Not getting any acetaldehyde here. I do get a little pumpkin flavor, but I think that's from the fresh pumpkin that you used. No obvious issues to me. So probably a little higher on flavor. I landed at a 13 on the, out of 20 on the flavor. Mouthfeel wise, it's medium light bodied, no astringency. It's, you know, which is good in a spice beer. If you overspice it, it can be real easy to get it, you know, harsh and biting. But yeah, it's not very creamy as a beer goes, but it's medium to medium low CO2. No obvious warmth here. Actually, that's another thing you could do is let it get a little stronger, give it a little alcohol boost to make it seem a little sweeter. If you want to go that direction, but this one seems like a middle of the road amber ale, you know, maybe 5.5-6%, I would guess, if I had to guess. But yeah, it's a bit light feeling overall. It's not too heavy on the palate, but it's mostly fine there in mouthfeel, for a spiced amber ale with an adjunct. So overall, I'd say it's a well-crafted pumpkin spice beer. It's got a lot going for it. It's clean. I would suggest dropping back the adjunct, you know, by quite a bit if possible. You can just add a chunk of pumpkin in there and say it's a pumpkin beer. You know,
don't listen to them. Don't do that.
Get your sweetness from the malt and let the spices do it. When you're tasting a pumpkin spice beer, you're not usually really tasting much of the pumpkin with everything else that's there. That's my opinion. JP, you can say whatever you want after that. Up the mat.
I'll say what I want when I want to, okay?
You can make a pumpkin beer with absolutely no pumpkin that would score really well in a competition. I guarantee you that.
Yes, but why would you want to do that?
Just to be weird? I don't know. But because it's going to be sweeter and be more dessert-like and candy-like, which...
But that's just a spice beer. It's not a pumpkin beer.
I would prefer it to be, no.
Well, anyway, is that it? Are you done, Brian?
Yeah. Get your mash temp up. If you're gonna use a lot of pumpkin, get it up toward 160 to coax out a little more sweetness and body from this one. I would also bring up the spices a bit, especially the cinnamon. But you know, they're kind of nice where they are. I like that they're restrained and they're not overpowering, but they're almost a little too restrained. It's not like, okay, this has got a good level of spice. It's like, okay, this is a light, dry amber beer with very low spice and it's okay. But you know, I like the beer as it is. It's clean. It landed at 35 out of 50. Brian and I are 7 points apart. So if this were a competition, we'd have to discuss and take each other out back and beat each other over the head with something, yeah. Figure it out.
Kiss each other.
I think it's a very good beer.
Cool. Let's take a quick break before we get to Jake and we're going to come back. We'll wrap this up and all that kind of fun stuff. So hang on, it's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are back with Jake. Brian and Brian have made their ruling. It's funny, I've been watching that botched show. Remember that show? That's plastic surgery show where these two dudes in Hollywood are like, one's a like a breast augmentation, you know, specialist, and the other guy does nose jobs, and it's very funny.
And they trade jobs and they see what happens.
Yeah, they go, why am I smelling twice out of my nipples? But they just put the first series on Netflix, and it's like they have a great rapport, and it just, I don't know, sort of reminds me of Dr. Homebrew if we were funny.
No desire to watch that show.
It's great. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's so funny. It's like everyone needs that one reality show, and I have apparently a couple. Anyways, Jake, this is your pumpkin beer. I mostly agree with most of what the guys were saying. Mostly agree with most. This is a fun beer. And it is sort of a middle of the road amber. It is sort of light. There is not a whole lot going on. It's kind of a thinner body amber. I would like to know what, you know, we'll get into the numbers there. I would love to see it almost like a brown ale, kind of beefier a little bit. To me, it's hard to pick out the ginger. I think I can pick out the ginger because ginger has this like sweetness to it that is sort of easily definable. And I think that's what I get. But I feel it's distracting from everything. I do think all the spices can come up a little bit, but that's provided, you know, I think that the malt is you know, comes up a little bit too, because those spices, I think, work with darker beers because of the kilned malts and how sweet those kind of crystal malts are. And those give some body and some sort of like mid palate feel, some boost to those spices. You know, you never put these spices in a pale ale because they're just the malt's not there. So I think going in with the malt would help amplify some of these a little bit more too. I want to know what you did with the pumpkin. I can taste it a little bit. Anyway, we'll go with that, and then I'll give you my feedback on the pumpkin. So tell us about your recipe, man.
Okay, cool. Well, first of all, I thought Char was going to give me an on-the-fly point boost, and he tricked me, and he changed his mind.
Yeah, here's even further behind the scenes. Coop and I had a brief text discussion like maybe a half an hour before that. And because I'm so on tilt tonight, I did not do what I was supposed to. I was going to come up a point or two, and I realized on the fly, I couldn't do it quite on the fly, and I was not sure then which way was I supposed to go. And I freaked out, and that didn't change anything. So that's the exciting world of podcasting for you people that are listening. All the exciting insight into my brain. So
I was supposed to come down a point, but I didn't do that either. So we just talked about the 7-point differential, and that's
It's okay to be 7 apart.
Some competitions allow it.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, I appreciate the candidness. I wouldn't want you to bullshit me. Okay, the recipe is 30% Munich, 30% Vienna, and 30% Chevalier, which I normally do Maris Otter, but I had Chevalier on hand, so I used that instead. And then 7% Carapils and about 1% of chocolate, just for the color. An ounce of Magnum at 60 minutes, and then half an ounce of EKG at 20 minutes. And then I use Imperial AO9 Pub for the yeast. Mash temp was 152. And I kind of aimed for like a
Now that you mentioned the Munich, I can taste the Munich a lot.
Yeah, you know, those are the Munich and the Amber make for good base malts.
Let's get down to it,
like
though,
this,
man. What did you come on.
You know, some pale malt. Oh, yeah. That's a good start. But then I kept waiting for you to say that, you know, a caramel or crystal or this or that. There's a liqueur and a little tiny bit of chocolate. That's all that's there to give the extra flavor, which is what was kind of missing to me. And the mash temp was lower than I'd want. And yes, how much of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did omit one crucial ingredient, which was the pumpkin. So in the mash, I added a whole, 28-ounce can, the bigger can of pumpkin puree. And then in the boil, I added basically an entire pumpkin that I grew in my yard. And then it's called a Jarredale pumpkin. It's like an Australian variety. It's blue. They're good for eating.
Okay.
Anyway, so I cut that in half and I roasted it in the oven with some brown sugar for a couple hours.
I've never had one of those types of pumpkins. It sounds interesting. It would explain the lower body because the pumpkin always ferments out all the way, whatever sugars you get out of that. And if you add an entire, how big is an entire pumpkin of that variety? Is it like 10 pounds or 2 pounds or what? Wow. Okay. I suspect that, not to interrupt you, I want to hear more about this. I'm tasting like that pumpkin skin acetaldehyde is that rather than converting in the mash, they kind of converted in the boil. And maybe that skin and everything else got exposed to those really high temperatures. And then either it tasted like acetaldehyde or maybe it gave off some acetaldehyde in that process. I'm not a chemist. I'm just trying to think about why I got some of that aroma and that flavor. And I've never heard of anyone using the pumpkin by cutting it up and throwing it in the boil. I mean, I appreciate your creativity. I've never heard of that.
And you clarified the beer well, too. I mean, I would think all the starches, you'd probably have a haze problem, but it's perfectly clear, and that's nice.
Yeah, thanks.
What were your numbers? What were your gravities?
You know.
Classic.
It ended up about 5.5%.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't find that info right now.
That's all right. Secret, I get it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty dry. And sure, I detected that whatever off flavor you thought you might have got.
Yeah, when you throw in 10 pounds
any vegetable sure if I like or not, and I think it's what you're talking about.
You're probably rolling the dice whether you're going to like how that comes out or what flavors come out of that or not.
But yeah, to me, there's nothing super gnarly. It's drinkable. And JP, you found it drinkable. It's not offensive, seriously offensive.
For sure.
Fine. It's not offensive. It's just, if I was, I'm going to be more judgmental if I was paying for it. Right. So if I went to a bar and got this beer and paid for it and said, hey, I want the fun beer and they gave this to me, I would be a little disappointed because it's sort of, it's like middle of the road, like we've already talked about. But it's made well, the flavors are good. I just want more of that.
It could be. I mean, you're going to have some conversion.
Andrew in the chat is saying that boiling pumpkin seems to not do anything. Pumpkin, those starches would be lost.
Depending how much you cut it up and the surface area and everything else, you're going to have, as the pumpkin passes through that, 145 to 160 F temperature range, that doesn't happen instantly. And yeah. I bet, I mean, even if you had a full boil, were you going at a full boil when you threw the pumpkin in, or did you raise everything up at the same time from like, is it a mash temperature? Okay. So there will be, I mean, it takes time to come up. And I agree with the commenter that, I mean, it's not going to be as efficient having it be sitting in your mash tun for an hour at a controlled temperature. It's going to be a starch conversion temp, but you are going to rise through that band of temperatures. So you'll get some conversion out of that. Not as much as you would if you mashed it.
Yeah, you're just going to get more of the external vegetable kind of component of the pumpkin.
Yeah.
And, it's nice that it was roasted. I think that's helping your cause here. But yeah, again, a lot of that starch, the listener is right. A lot of that starch is just locked up in the meat of the pumpkin.
Yeah. The best pumpkin beer I've ever had is from Rogue, and they take like sugar pumpkins that they grow on the farm there and they cut them up and then they roast those and then put them in. And I think it's just, I can't remember if they chop them up into like cubes and roast those, so there's more surface area to, you know, with the caramelized sugars versus steamed, you know, vegetable. I think that might help too, but it was such an impactful flavor. It was like the first time I was like, oh my God, this is very, very good. I think, you know, as this warms up, I think everything is fine. I think what it is the amber ale base that we've sort of picking on a little bit. But I think if that had more body malts to it and everything else was the same, we would be having a different conversation. Because I think that those sort of crystal malts can either hide or perhaps pair with the sort of pumpkin in the boil aspect that we're getting. And we wouldn't be focusing so much on how the pumpkin was added. So I think you can keep everything the same and just change the base, which you probably don't have any more of these pumpkins left up.
Next
what do
year's
I
harvest. Yeah. And then maybe just
and try to go for like a beefier, boil, maltier base, do the same thing. And I think it would be, puree, I mean, you'd probably get, you know, 5 points, you know, out of that.
Nice and kind of loosened up and the starches are more available. Mix them in the mash, you know, scrape, you know, whatever you can do to get the starches mixed in with that mash. Mash at a higher temperature and add some crystal malts or a Cara Munich or just something a little more characterful in there. Yeah,
I mean, change one thing at a time, and that's a good advice usually.
Flavor.
And you know what?
I wouldn't change it.
I think your spicing level, the nutmeg level was perfect. I think that was great. I will rarely say this. A little more cinnamon, a little more ginger might be good. That or just cut them out. You know, I think it's hard to or put them in at a little bit higher level. You still don't taste them. Just don't tell anybody. That's you don't have to declare the ingredient if you don't taste it.
A little allspice, maybe.
I think the cinnamon would help. Cinnamon is a nice spice for this.
Yeah. I agree.
I like it. Jake, do you have questions?
Yeah, thanks. That's actually some of the same feedback I've got is people taste the nutmeg, not the cinnamon or the ginger. Yeah. So that's for sure consistent. So when you say up the base, would you just pivot and go more brown ale or would you just make this a higher gravity amber?
I would personally, because I like the sweetness from the brown ale and amber ales aren't my preferred style. So, you know, but at the end of the day, you're drinking it. So if you enjoy an amber, you want these flavors together, then, you know, do that. But I think that personally, these kind of beers lend themselves better to more brown ales than they do lighter beers.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of tricky to really refine this recipe because I only make it once a year because it's fun to make, not because I want 5 gallons of the goddamn stuff.
I get you, man.
But I do have those pumpkins actually save really well. You just stick them in the basement. They last for like 6 months. It's crazy. So I got
really
a bunch more. Maybe I'll make another batch.
Nice.
Just to see what I can do.
Go for it.
Yeah, have some
and then
fun.
Get some bombers, get some 22-ounce bottles and give them away to all your friends and neighbors at Christmas time.
Yeah, right on. Okay, yeah, no, that's all really good advice and feedback. I've been taking some notes, but I think we've kind of covered everything, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I wanted to mention the last one we did. You remember I followed Julia Hers?
Yeah.
And that was awful, right?
He's a hard act to follow, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So I had meant to mention this, but I had been listening to a podcast that she was on. I can't remember which one. And she was like, hey, enter NHC this year, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll do it. And I did. Mm. And I did okay. And then I just got really into competing and it's all because of her. So I just wanted to like shout out to her.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Very cool, man.
No, she's really smart. She's really an engaging speaker and she was a fantastic guest.
Awesome energy. Always enjoy judging with her, talking to her every time we meet.
Yeah, she's cool. All right, Jake, if that's it, man, you're free to go.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Send us another one down the road.
Yeah.
Right on. See you guys.
All right. Bye. All right, that's it. We're done. We're out of here. folks. We don't have to take another break. We're great. We're good.
Yeah.
And if you want to be on this show, you go email Brian, go to your email computer and email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. You do that and Brian will get back to you and he'll say, he'll send you a long email that basically just says, send JP beer and we'll figure it out. And that's all you do.
Yeah, that's it.
You have to worry about it. What kind of beers do we take, Brian Char?
Brian with an I. We're Brian Char. What do you want?
We take anything fermented. Pretty much. Poison ivy meads, no, you know, nothing, nothing with poop. There was about many years ago at like the first B3 forum comp. I didn't judge this one.
Yeah.
This was it when EJ Fair was still under construction. It was literally, it was at More Beer, that one back room you guys had. Mm-hmm. And someone at the next table refused to judge a poison ivy mead because they're allergic to poison ivy. So I'm sure it was fine. Nobody died when they drank it, but no poop, no, it's, you know, like that. Just normal fermented beverages. We'd love to have some.
Poison ivy mead is just kind of like, eh, dare ya. I fucking dare ya. You know,
how do you know that those bees went to poison ivy flowers? Seriously, did you set up in a field of poison ivy? No, there's not a field of poison ivy anywhere. Maybe out in the woods, but you know,
does poison ivy flower?
I've never seen it flower. I'm from Minnesota. I know what poison ivy looks like.
Yeah.
Then I think somebody named it something. Someone named it that. And listeners, if any one of you entered that, you want to fess up and tell us whether that was really poison ivy, honey? We'd love to hear about it.
Yeah.
Or that was a fun comp. Like a herbed mead with poison ivy as the added spice. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they soaked it. Yeah, who knows? Yeah, that was a fun comp. I started that comp. That was my thing.
Yeah.
Cool. Back in the day. It's my contribution to the world. One of them. One of many, because I'm so awesome. All right, we're going to get out of here, everybody. If you're listening live, hang on for just a sec. We're going to come right back. We have two more beers to drink, and it's going to be a good time. So check that out. If you're listening on the podcast, we have all these other shows to listen to. I forget how many. And of course, all the other shows on the network. So check those out as well. All right.
They're
until fun. Next time.
Cheers.
We'll see you guys.